So just how pressing of an issue is refugee resettlement for governments worldwide right now?
Well, I don't think it's a major concern to government at the moment. So we had sort of figures of refugee resettlement reached a high in 2016, and it's been going downward from there, especially because refugee resettlement is dominated by very few countries. The biggest resettling countries being the US, Canada, and Australia. And under the Trump presidency, there's been a considerable decline of refugee resettlement places.
It's interesting you mention Australia there, because Australia's obviously been heavily criticised by bodies here at home and from organisations like the United Nations for our treatment of asylum seekers on places like Nauru and Manus Island. How do we compare with other Western nations right now?
So as you mentioned, these are two slightly different things, asylum seeking and refugee resettlement. I mean, the goal of the two is to provide protection to people fleeing persecution, but the claim for protection from asylum seekers hasn't been recognized yet, whereas a resettled refugee has had its claim for protection already recognized prior to arriving to a resettling country such as Australia. And in regards to resettlement, Australia's numbers have actually increased over the last few years. This is largely due to the fact that the Abbott government actually accepted, after lots of debates and push from states and advocacy organizations at the local level, to accept Syrian refugees and Iraqi refugees between 2015 and 17. So comparably, in terms of resettlement at the moment, higher than it was, say, 5 to 10 years ago.
How do those numbers compare, though, with demand?
Yes, so that's a major issue in the resettlement space. So first, if we look at protection offered to refugees, we have a global refugee crisis of about 68.5 million people that are displaced in the world. Now, 40 million of that are displaced in their own countries, and we have 25 million of refugees, of which only about 100,000-ish are resettled every year. It's a very small figure.
Is it even possible to find places for all these people, given the movements we haven't seen since the end of World War II?
So a very small amount of refugees are considered by the UN refugee agency, UNHCR, to be in need of resettlement anyway. So it's a million two, for instance, 1.2 million refugees. But still, of that, just maybe less than 10% are resettled. So no, I don't think it is. Unfortunately, it's not possible, even though the demand for resettlement places is actually far lower than the total number of people who need protection.
Australia has seen at least one resettlement deal with the US and caused a bit of controversy by turning down other offers from New Zealand. How do these deals, or maybe our attitudes surrounding these deals, compare to other countries, other offers?
This is very specific to Australia. You have to take it back to the whole... Okay, so first, the whole offshore processing issue that we have with Australia, so which is that intermittently since 2001, we've had sent asylum seeker, people wanted to claim asylum on Australian territory, to third country, to other countries in the region, so now in Papua New Guinea. And in 2013, the Rudd government said people whose asylum claim are assessed there, even when they are recognised as refugees, won't be sent to Australia to be resettled to Australia. We could actually call that an Australian resettlement ban for these people. And following that, New Zealand has straight away made an offer to the Australian government that they could be resettled in New Zealand. And since Australia has consistently refused New Zealand's offer, has refused to take it up. New Zealand has even tried directly bilaterally with the Nauru government, and the Nauru government has refused. Now, in 2016, Malcolm Turnbull, the then Prime Minister, struck a deal with the Obama administration in the US, and the Obama administration, and then actually the Trump administration, still supported this, reluctantly but did, to resettle up to 1,250 refugees from Nauru and Papua New Guinea that were hosted there, to the US. So far, I think it's about 370 that have gone to the US. So it's far less than what's expected. And there is very little transparency of what's going on there.
As you mentioned there, it was a rather infamous phone call between then PM Malcolm Turnbull and US President Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump was not a big fan of the deal, at least when he spoke to Turnbull. You mentioned a couple of minutes ago also that America is generally dropping their intake of refugee numbers.
Dramatically so, yes, dramatically so. So under the Obama administration, I think 2016, It was levels of resettlement. If we count UN-sponsored resettlement and additional resettlement channels, it was above 100,000 places around that. It has dropped through the U.S. saying that they would resettle. So the Trump administration fixing the resettlement quota for 2017-18 to 45,000. And they have actually so far taken 20,000, which is basically actually, if it continues like this, it's going to be less than Canada and almost on par with Australia. That's unprecedented.
One of the really interesting points when we talk about where these people are going to go that was brought up in the introduction to this book, Refugee Resettlement, was the question of agency and how it applied to refugee movements. Do we fail to take into account the choices refugees make as individuals in what movements to take, where they resettle?
I do think this is very difficult to take in account the options that refugees have for various reasons. So first, very often when you have a humanitarian crisis, if you apply sort of big solutions, you don't, for instance, deciding to bring people to a camp and organizing their lives. You don't necessarily tend to focus on people's ability to make their own options, to make their own decision, to consider people's options. That's one issue. A different side of this is sometimes refugees are considered victims. We see them as victims instead of, for instance, saying them as survivors. I mean, people have survived tremendous violence and have fled. They have exerted their agency. And I have been told in my own research by people that they have some discomfort about the label of refugees when they are perceived as victims. So that's an issue, yes.
Before I let you go, I did want to touch on your area of expertise in terms of employment support for refugees. What kind of challenges are actually involved there?
So we're talking about people who don't choose to move, right? So you can, for instance, end up in Australia and not necessarily have learned English before. It's also not one of the requirements of your visa that you need to speak English when you are a refugee because you come here for protection. That's the purpose of that visa. And we do know for newcomers, one of the biggest challenges when they to enter the labor market is the command of the language of the country you're in. So English language is a major issue. My research also focuses things that come from the host society. So for instance, recognition of your experience, work experience and student experience from another country. That tends to be very difficult. It's hard to transfer. For instance, if you were a doctor in, say, Afghanistan or Syria, being recognized as a doctor in Australia is very difficult.
Very big difference between the situation a skilled migrant might face compared to, as you say, a refugee who hasn't chosen to leave.
Exactly. And also because a skilled migrant, the qualifications are assessed before they come. So they come sometimes with a job, very often with a job offer anyway. So they come specifically for a particular job, whereas a refugee doesn't come to this situation. Now, there is talk and to try to involve the private sector more in this space, and things might change in the future, we will see. But for the moment, that's an issue. Another issue that I like to focus on is just the amount of services that you have to be in touch with to, settle in Australia. And if you don't speak the languages, you don't really know how to access information, that can be very difficult. So that's also an issue, this puzzle of the different services involved.
And just this week, PM Scott Morrison has been looking at options for cutting the intake of temporary workers and encouraging more migrants to settle outside major centres. How realistic in terms of employment is it to have more migrants moving out to small cities, regional areas and the like?
So not all regional cities are the same. So there is a Regional Australia Institute that publishes really good studies to really show how different it is from one regional city to the other. So I really think that if you could sort of match the kind of skills that are needed in these, cities, but also taking in account whether people are, happy to welcome new settlers, if they have the resources to welcome them, then there might be potential for this. But it is quite hard to just expect by just sending some skilled migrants of, without really looking at the specific profiles to a regional place that they necessarily want to stay there. So you really have to take into account a number of other factors. Otherwise, what might happen is that the person doesn't stay in the region for a very long time.
Adele, thank you very much. Best of luck, obviously, with the publication, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Sean.